The Breakfast Club.
Adam White is ready for a big week of sports discussion on The Breakfast Club. Last one for 2021. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. You know what sort of morning it is, Daniel? It's a something sort of morning.
Yes, it is.
What is it?
Something sort of morning.
Yeah, come on. You can get this.
It's not autumnal.
No, it's not autumnal.
Well, you know I love that word.
I know.
Well, it's a good golfing sort of morning?
Well, it certainly is that.
Well, I'm 2 for 2. I don't think I'm right yet.
No.
What is it?
It's a hot air balloon sort of morning.
Well, I've spoken about the balloons.
Did you?
Yeah. You weren't listening.
No, I wasn't.
And that hurts my heart early. Sorry. I've been going for 4 minutes and you haven't listened to a word I've said.
No, I haven't. I genuinely haven't.
Genuinely upsetting.
Yeah. Daniel, can we start again? We'll start again. Say.
Morning, Whitey.
G'day, Daniel. How are you?
Going well. Have you seen the balloons out the window?
Yeah, I heard you talking about it before. It's a hot air balloon sort of morning, isn't it?
My goodness. It's a great start. It's a very, very positive start for us. We can't see this going any better through the next 2.5 hours. So that's as good as you're going to get. Although, it might. It might. There's a bit to talk about. Because we've been joined by not Adam Ramanaskis on a Monday morning. Normally, the Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars, sits in the chair. Today, he has given us the Khyber. And we've got the very, very learned Scotty Gallen from the Herald Sun with us on a Monday morning. Hello, Scotland.
Hello, Daniel. Yeah, I forgot. This is Adam. What's his excuse this time?
He just doesn't want to hang.
Back surgery last time, I think I was here.
He was.
He's still claiming some level of pain and suffering on the back of that. I dispute that.
He's getting very old and grumpy. Grumbly.
Is he grumpy?
Grumpy. Grumbly.
Grumbly and grumpy.
Yeah, a lot of things.
Yeah. So you're here and we're very happy about that.
Thank you. It's very good to be here.
Because you know stuff in the world of sport.
Well,
you write stuff in the world of sport.
Yeah, that's apparently what I do. That's correct.
You haven't started with the new, the code? How's the code going?
It's an interesting development.
Now, sports fans might know about this. It's become a bit of a thing. Code is... Is it a website? Is it a... What is it?
I missed the briefings. It is a website. I think it's... The key is long form. So if you want to read a long feature on Daniel Harford's Life and Times...
It'll be long.
You go to Code. But then when I clicked on it, it's also... It's up-to-date website as well. So it's got everything. So I think... Because of my employer, I'm supposed to say, get on board. So I will say that. But it's interesting. They're having a crack. Let's just say that.
They're cracking the code.
Let's see.
Codesports.com.au if you want to find out more.
It's impressive. There's lots of stuff there to digest.
But it's more your long form stuff.
That's what we were sold
as. It's not clickbait. Is that what you're saying?
No.
It's authentic old school journalism.
No, well, that's in. No, I don't like that term because I am authentic long form. I'm all authentic. Lord. It's just another option with lots of goodness to take in. There you go. That's a good PR line.
Righto. Okay. Is that the official tag?
Oh, there's lots of official tags. But there is some good stuff there, including a man you and I don't know anything about, Georgie. Our next. Is it world champ? What did he do?
Yeah, world champ.
He knocked some bloke out overseas, and Georgie's a man now.
No, well, I'm very, very comfortable in saying outside of yesterday, I didn't know too much about George. But I've read a lot about George in the last 24 hours.
I watched his right hook in the first round, and he gobbed off at his man after he won too, which I think I like George.
Well, his man, did you hear his man?
He wasn't happy.
His man, he didn't give perhaps the kudos that he should have.
And George said, look at your face, mate. I smashed you. Go away. We are talking about George Kambosos.
George Kambosos, yes. We're going to speak to Paul Upham about him a little bit later on.
Paul can tell us all about George.
He'll know more about him. But, yeah, he stunned the world yesterday. Stunned the world. To snatch the WBA
and
Super.
He's got a junior at the end of his name, which
IBF,
I like.
IBF, WBO, the ring lightweight titles.
As you know, it's not really my thing, boxing, Daniel.
No, but I'm better aware of that.
I do think it is interesting that he's been Manny Pacquiao's sparring partner for a number of years.
Oh.
And that's where he sort of got his background from, as in, you know, to get to the position he's in now. So
right.
It is actually quite an interesting story about how he sort of got his foundation. And Manny was one of the first to congratulate him after his win yesterday.
So is he still running the Philippines, Manny?
Yeah, I think he kept trying to come back and fight, but I think he's still in politics. Your man Teofimo Lopez was unbeaten from 16. He'd won 12 by knockout, so he's pretty happy with his work. And George sat him down.
Sat him down. And your man too, Philo, wasn't happy about that, just by the way. But we've got another winner, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on through the morning. Whitey had a cricket go Friday night. I'm keen to find out.
Oh, Friday night.
Friday night, he's got both the boys in the same
coaching?
Team.
Coaching? Oh, dear.
He's coaching both the boys, so there's some real sort of Demir Dokic action going on.
This is only going to be tears. Your tears, not your kids' tears. What's happened?
How'd it go, Scott?
Oh, there's a deep breath.
Well, it was a resounding victory, so I just put it on the table quickly.
We don't, not that we score. Not that we score. Not that we score.
Well, we don't score.
Just say this happened. It didn't happen, but just say it
happened. Hang on a second.
So if you're coaching
yes.
and you're umpiring at the...
Real control.
Not square leg, but you're umpiring the main part.
What, behind the stumps?
Yeah. So you're at the... I don't know what you call it, because in AFL it would be the controlling umpire, but you're at the bowler's end. We'll call it that. That's probably the best way of describing it. Bowler's
end. Yeah, bowler's end, okay.
And your your 9-year-old son, I'm not saying this happened, but just say if it did happen, what would you do?
So it certainly happened, so let's just...
He mancads the opposition and then takes off on a celebratory sort of appeal type situation for mancadding the child... At the non-striker's end.
It should be a child in an under-10s game, so that's a positive. Ravi Ashwin would say kudos to him, because the batsman's trying to gain an unfair advantage. And I'm sure that was probably the debate that may or may not have happened.
Under-10s, probably one warning. Do they get a warning?
Or who gets the warning?
The batsman. Not out. Warning.
Well,
you put the finger up.
No, definitely not.
Did you give the bowler a warning?
I gave the bowling a warning.
Was there a card situation?
I told the bowler. Sorry, this is if it did happen.
If it did happen, it might not have.
The bowler was told that if he did that again, he'd go and sit in the car for the rest of the match.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that. It's a rule of cricket. The young batsman needs to learn.
Absolutely, but not at that level. And then the next ball, Daniel.
Well, no.
He did it again.
The said bowler... Did it again.
Oh, no.
But didn't take the bails off, but just warned the batsman at the other end, I'm watching you.
With intimidating behaviour.
I told you there was issues here.
This was going to end in tears.
Under 10s he's doing this.
So, what did the said bowler, if this, oh, this may have happened one day, if could happen, you're just preparing, I suppose, for opportunities. If this happened one day, what do you think the bowler might respond with once given that ultimatum of sitting in the car and then the intimidatory threat?
Get emotional with the said coach/umpire and probably not talk to him for quite some time and make a bit of a song and dance about it.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Some may say it was on like Donkey Kong between said umpire and said child due to demonstrative behaviour.
Oh, boy. Yeah, no, this needs to be nipped in the bud, I'd suggest.
I think we've made a rod for our backs.
Was there no KFC on the way home or something? Something needed to be enforced.
Anyway, I genuinely don't know what to do.
What
did you speak to the parents involved?
I did.
Did you lay down the law to them? Because this is clearly a parental issue.
The other parent wasn't at the game. Was at a musical, and was told about this late that evening. And there was robust discussion and a suggestion that son may not be able to play in father's team moving forward.
Oh, that's a big development.
Boy, that is a development.
What did secondary son do? Was he just watching?
Secondary son was the wicketkeeper as a 6-year-old. And
for the opposition?
The opposition, because we had too many. We had to give them to other players.
Okay.
And he just went about his business. Very different to older son.
Did he hit one to cow corner?
He did. Quite a few to cow corner.
He's strong over the cow. He is the youngest son.
Good
Speaking of sons, Scotland, I need your advice on this. Whitey can't help me with this one just yet, but you can, because you have children that are of age.
Yes, my man is very much adulthood now.
I was summoned to the basketball court yesterday. Well, the basketball ring. Let's not say it's a court. There's a ring in the backyard.
Yes.
I was summoned by my 14-year-old son, who's starting to invest some time into his physical stature.
Oh,
he's trying to lift some
right. Lift, is lift he some right. And, right?
He's found the opposite types.
No, well, I don't believe so. But he's found a website that shows muscles, and he thinks he'd like a piece of that action.
I like this.
He's not overly not overly well.
Protein shakes yet?
Well, yeah, yes. Oh, dear. That's become a thing. No. Spinach, even.
Oh, no, he's gone.
Like, 14-year-old eating spinach is an unusual thing, but of choice.
It's absurd.
Is even more so. So he's investing some time into that element of his life at the moment. So he summons me to the basketball court yesterday, which he hasn't done for a while because I would take him down to Chinatown sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, I'm a physical beast down low in the paint.
Yeah, I understand that.
And he can't compete with the physicality. Yesterday was the first time he wanted a piece of me.
He said he thought he was ready.
Yeah, he threw down the gauntlet because he was lifting weights, and he was really physical. And I thought, I'm not sure I can keep up with this.
Right,
he was quite strong.
Okay,
and I wasn't ready for this, but I think there's been a realization that there's some growth coming, and some strength evolving in this 14-year-old physique, and I'm concerned about where this might go, Scotty. I might get beaten soon.
Has he got the garage gym set up? Where is he doing his weights?
There's a little thingy at the back, a little squat rack at the back with a little bench. Thinks he's pretty cool.
No, this trouble. This will lead to violence soon. Soon he'll say, pick up that and put it in the bin. No, that's not going to happen. Because he now feels stronger than
him. Yes, he thinks he's got
something. Is he tall? Is he shooting up?
He's shooting up. Yeah, he is. He's nearly got me
covered. If he gets to equal height, you're in all sorts.
Well, I was just impressed / concerned / intimidated by his level of physicality.
It's going to raise your level for a little while. You'll be able to go with him for...
Well, it showed me I need to do some work.
Well, you'll have to get...
I'm surprised it's taken this long for him to want to take you downtown.
Well, no, he wanted to take me for a while.
Just wasn't physically
just
ready.
Just didn't have the courage nor the physical requirements. But he's been doing a bit of work, and all of a sudden there's some real strength in the young fellow's legs.
14 and the weights.
Does he verbalise you?
Yes. Well, yes, he does, because he's an idiot. He trash talks, just like all the...
Well, he's his father's son, let's be honest.
But as you would be well aware, his father is more than capable to come back in those fields. So he cops a fair bit coming back the other way. It took me a while to get him down. It was 21-19 in the end.
It was hot yesterday.
It was epic.
Did you make it close, or was it just close?
No, I was hanging on by a thread.
Right.
Does the shirt come off? Because it was hot, obviously.
His did.
His did. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm liking this.
No.
Yeah, his did. Shirt was off early. But... About 7'3", the shirt came on.
He goes, all right, let's get serious.
And he was good. It was actually good to see, because he hasn't been that kid. He hasn't been that kid.
You get called to school next week, he's just beat up about three of them. You're like, oh, okay.
But this is the phase, I'm sure, that we're going through. You've had...
That's early. That's I'm impressed, actually.
See where it ends up.
Trouble. I've got that already. No.
Well, they start with it, and then they work out. You're going to smash them to smithereens when they're twigs still, if you play hard like I do, and then they come back when they're ready. This is good. Mm. I'm pleased with this.
It's a development. It's definitely a development.
I've been summoned to the football oval this afternoon.
Right.
Mm. Oh, what?
It's a big guy. Something's going on.
Right. This is good.
Something.
We'll see.
You've got to check what he's watching on YouTube. Check his social medias.
He's looking at... He's looking at Mr. Universe stuff. He was the other day.
Gosh.
I don't think it's going to get to that point, but
I've just got a 6-year-old that we play cricket, and he said, "Dad, the faster you bowl, the harder I'm going to hit it. Give it."
That's pretty good. The longer it's going to go, you're going to have to fetch it.
Give it to me, mate. Give it to me. This is what 6-year-old say. Give it to me, mate. Give me your best.
Oh dear.
Faster you bowl, the further it's going to go, mate. This is a 6-year-old, and Daniel knows he does do
That's
this.
That's exactly right.
And they stand for the opening batsman, who says to Ashes selectors, "I may not have scored any runs in the most recent Shield game, but I've got triple figures here."
Brent Speed on Fox Sports calling the century of Alex Carey yesterday for South Australia in their match against Queensland. It wasn't enough for South Australia to get the chocolates, because Matthew Renshaw, one of the other fine young batsmen of the country, has decided that he would put on a clinic and make 156 not out to guide them to victory, chasing down the 274 by the Redbacks. 4 for 275 was the outcome for the Bulls. Renshaw going berserk, but Alex Carey did make a century, 101 off 93. And all the talk since has been about the fact that he should be the next player in, with Tim Payne stepping away from cricket, which we'll talk about shortly, Whitey. Alex Carey has to be the one in. He made a century in the Marsh One Day Cup yesterday, even though they lost.
Well, we can't be in a situation where every time someone does something, that all of a sudden they need to be in the team.
But that's what's happening.
Based on one performance.
That's what's happening.
And particularly considering the fact that it was white ball cricket, not red ball cricket.
Mm-hmm.
It's handy for Alex Carey, and it's timely for Alex Carey, but I don't think it's any more than that. Because George Bailey on this radio station talked about a body of work over a period of time is how they'll select the team and how they'll select the players in the team. And that was why Marcus Harris got the job as the opening batsman. It wasn't because he came out there and got 100 in the first game at Drummoyne Oval. It was what he'd done over a period of time. Now, if he continually failed, well, then it might be a bit of a different set of circumstances. Now, that's Alex's second century in the Marsh Cup, the one-day cup.
Yes.
He hasn't done particularly well through the Shield season. He's been okay at times.
He's been woeful.
He's got a couple of scores, but
he's in his last five innings, just his last five, so last three matches, he averages 5.6. In his Shield summer to date, he averages 21.8, 153 runs through eight innings, one of those not out.
I was going to say, there's a not out in there as well. So, look, whereas you look at Josh Inglis, now Josh scored three centuries in the Sheffield Shield season last year, and then continued in white ball cricket both here in Australia but also overseas. So, again, how much do you put on what he's done in white ball cricket versus what he's done in red ball cricket? It is such a marginal thing between these two as to who gets the job.
Isn't Carey been the anointed one for a couple of years? So why don't we just give him a crack?
He got pushed aside a little bit for a while.
Well, he got dropped.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Seemingly unfair.
I was trying to be nice.
Yeah.
Pushed aside.
Wasn't that a little bit unfair or not?
Well, it was quite remarkable, Scotty, because he was captain of the one day team with others not playing, and when Aaron Finch got injured, to being out of the team altogether.
Yeah.
Again, that is T20 cricket. He hadn't done particularly well through that series, and there is clearly a push for Josh Inglis from some quarters.
Shane Warne.
Yep. And Ricky Ponting.
Oh.
Gee.
I would have thought Carey, because he's been in the, you know, like you said, leadership tick. He must have some leadership qualities. Cummings is going to need all the help he can get. Play him.
I agree with you. And I think he clearly fits the PR thing as well, with Pat Cummins as someone that's...
He's a very nice man, Alex.
He's a very nice man. He is, and we're hoping to chat to him at some point this week.
He's on all the time.
No, yeah. He's with us.
I'd like to think that he gets the opportunity. I think he deserves it. But we'll see.
We'll see. Well, he might be in the team. What we do know is that as on Friday it was announced, the world's worst-kept secret in cricket, that Pat Cummins would be the Australian captain. He was speaking on Friday around that situation. Let's have a listen to the new skipper of the Aussie Test team.
I feel like I've got quite a lot of experience to draw on that. I think a lot of the problems... or potential issues around being a fast bowling captain. I'm sure we'll be able to work through. So, feeling overall excitement, as opposed to being too nervous.
So that was Pat Cummins on Friday. He was talking about being announced as captain of the Australian team. Steve Smith, his deputy. There's been a bit of feedback on Steve Smith through the last couple of days as well, that he's had such a desire to be back in the top chair that playing second fiddle Scotland might not suit his agenda.
It's a very good point, because watching his body, he's not a great body language man on the field.
No.
So if you're a vice captain, he's the sort of guy you can read him very easily. So if he's grumpy or seems to be not getting his way on the field, it's going to be very obvious. So I think that it's a good point to get that warning out there. Stephen, you are 2IC. And if you do, you serve your time. Well, you'll probably never be captain. I mean, Pat Cummins isn't going anywhere, but you need to support him rather than be a bit of your lone wolfish type situation.
Well, he's going to have to help out a fair bit if...
Absolutely.
Depending on where Cummins is positioning himself during
the
course of play.
Forcing yourself too much onto the captain.
And as we discussed last week, because it was discussed or mooted by selectors at the time, Whitey, that the rotation of the bowlers might affect Pat Cummins' captaincy if he's not going to be playing for one of the five
tests.
That
does hurt you.
He was strong on Friday, saying that he won't be getting rested throughout.
Well, he can't now.
Yeah.
He can't now. And look, he played all of last summer, and he played the entire Ashes series back in 2019. So it's not like he has been part of bowling rotations previously in recent times. And, you know, he'll field at mid-off. I don't think there's any dramas there. It probably wouldn't be a bad thing. You can sort of work with the bowlers, and then you've got Smith in the cordon. I think what it did do on Friday is categorically rule out Steve Smith ever captaining Australia again. Because if he was ever going to do it again, he'd do it now. Because you'd expect Cummins to do it for a fairly long period of time. Now, if he was to get injured, well, that's a different set of circumstances. But to get it out right on merit, I don't think that's going to happen. And then I'm just, again, I've said this a number of times and I'll say it again, I'm just really disappointed in how this has all played out for Tim Payne. It beggars belief to me, and maybe it is happening behind the scenes, that he's not being supported as he should be, as someone that has been captain of Australia for a period of time, for someone that has helped Australian cricket get themselves out of a really difficult position with the leadership that he showed and the way that he represented the country, that he's had a moment or he's had a couple of moments and it doesn't feel like he's getting the same sort of support that he should get considering the support that he showed Cricket Australia.
So he announced on Friday through his management that he would be taking time away from all forms of cricket. There was a concern from his manager about the current state of both he and his wife Bonnie through all this, and they're stepping away from everything.
The best result for him and their organisation, he doesn't do it, but if Cricket Australia came out straight away and said, it's on us, we cleared him, it was wrong at the time, you know, we didn't act on it properly, and make it more about them stuffing it up rather than... Because he was investigated and cleared.
Yep.
So basically, he hasn't done anything wrong since. It's just this old stuff's come up, which was, you know, he apologised and did it all. But if Cricket Australia took the blame more, you know how there was a bit of a gap in play and they fumbled around and Cricket Tasmania blamed it. If Cricket Australia came out quickly and owned it, I reckon he might have... Captaincy may not, but his career might not have been over. Like, it's over now.
Yeah, it's just...
Do you agree? I mean, yeah, I do.
It just sits really uncomfortably with me. It feels like the Cricket Australia was so concerned about its brand and its image.
Blaming each other.
And exactly right. And sort of saying, oh, well, Tim's, you know, he's resigned now. That was his call, you know. But it didn't sort of say anything. Yeah. It just, I don't know. Look, I'm not condoning what he did. But at the same point, it's not my business to judge whether he did the right or wrong thing. That's for his family and his friends to judge. This is a situation which was a private matter that's become public, and that's unfortunate, and I don't think there's ever going to be any winners out of that. But I just feel, particularly considering what he did for Australian cricket in a difficult time where people made mistakes, he helped repair a lot of damage.
But
and,
his...
and I just, you know, people make mistakes.
His line that it's, you know, the standard that the Australian captain should be held to, that probably sending a photo of your bits doesn't quite fit in.
No, I agree with you on that.
To be fair.
Yeah. But again, he wasn't captain at the time, and they knew that before they went ahead and made him the
long-term
captain.
Well, that's the bit that Cricket Australia just should own and don't.
Well, but it's... Anyway.
So he's having some time out at the moment.
And he was going to struggle to get picked, wasn't he? He hadn't... battered.
Well, he's injured. He has his neck problems. There was a whole lot of concern for him.
His prep was horrible.
Let's see what the big dog's got for us today out there in RSN land. He's back again with us on the open line. Hello, dog.
Morning, lads. How are we?
Going great.
What a beautiful morning.
Absolutely.
It's a hot air balloon sort of morning.
It is.
You wouldn't believe it.
Got a question for Mr. Wallop.
Right. Wallop.
Yes. I see that he had man of the match on Saturday. He's taken fourth and top scoring again.
How'd you know that?
Well, you know, word gets around the traps.
Hang on. What's happened here?
Explain, please.
What's happened?
I don't talk about it because it's
What have you done?
Well,
what have you done?
Fans want to know what you've done.
Well, it may have been 4 wickets and 49, but you know,
49 couldn't quite get there.
Well, there was an incident.
Did you feel the pressure?
Dog, are you following our man's domestic cricket career?
I wouldn't say follow, but keep an eye, you know. I was going to ask Mr. Wallop himself, how would he describe his batting and his bowling?
Well, completely controlled the...
number five for the Australian side coming up.
Completely controlled the innings, to be honest, when I batted, but 125 runs in 2 games and 6 wickets, it's okay, Daniel. It's still in the season. Exactly. I'm not talking about that. That's not important right now.
Dog, great awareness by you.
Very good. I'm impressed.
If I had a key to the cupboard, I'd probably find you something. Just that bloody key. I don't know where it is. The prize cupboard's got it. You just can't open it.
Yeah, no, I've been trying to find some golf balls around here.
Need a crowbar. Thank you, Dog. Hey, so did you win or lose?
Oh, we had a good win. It was good.
Well, last week you had some success individually, but not
collective. Yeah, no, it was a very young team, and a couple of kids did very well.
You've gone into post-match presser speak. You've gone into Ramanaska's manager speak.
No, we have a lot of really good young kids coming through, and at the moment there's one that's showing them sort of how to play, a sort of clean type situation.
You were saying in the build-up to the clash on the weekend that it was a small ground. You were looking forward to going big.
You know when the ground is really small and you almost program yourself, don't do anything stupid because it's a really small ground? It was a bit of that.
So what happened on 49? I mean, you won off. I mean, what happened? You're better than that.
Well, I struck a very good drive straight down the ground and the bowler tried to get out of the way of it and put up his hands to shield his face because I was worried it was going to kill him. And it stuck in his hand.
So you accidentally
caught it.
You hit the ball in the air. That's what cost you.
That's what my dad said. He said, well, you could have just hit the ball on the ground.
That's correct. Not to be 49, not bad, though. Not bad. Thank you, Dog, for that. Just by the way, we're talking cricket.
But by the way, if I knew I was 49, I clearly wouldn't have taken any sort of risk. I would have just knocked it into mid wicket and taken the single.
Just ready.
Steve Waugh style.
Just ready.
A bit horrified.
Don't worry about that.
Well, actually, on Sunday, we're at a friend's house. So how'd you go at cricket? I said, oh, yeah, I got 50, you know. And James said, no, you didn't, Dad. You got 49.
Yeah, good. Oh, good. Yeah. Don't go elevated.
Yeah, I didn't get there.
Just routed it up.
GST, mate. Scotty, just as we went to the cricket, as we get to the break, a bit of tennis coming up after this with Craig Gabriel. Can you go to page 70 of your paper, please?
70?
No, seven. At the front. Yes. Because there's a big summer of sport coming up, and your publication decided to highlight for Melbourne fans to get back in, which is great. Can you just tell me the name of that Melbourne Stars all-rounder, please?
Matthew Stoinis.
Oh, no.
It's the brother of Marcus.
Matthew Stoinis.
What page is that on?
Page 7. Monique Conti's there. Jack White's there from Melbourne United.
Is it Monique Conti?
Or whether that's a good question.
Is it Mary Conti?
You know what I'm very happy about in that photo?
What are you happy about?
Jack White has even bothered to put on the leg sleeve for a photo shoot.
Great point.
Brother, you're not about to play for 3 hours.
Yes, well, he won't be the MCG playing, but Matthew Stoinis will be with the Stars through the Big Bash.
Dear.
We'll have a chat to Alistair Dobson about that.
I reckon I'd put that fairly and squarely on the Melbourne Stars media manager for getting that wrong.
Ooh. I would too. I would too. He's a disgrace.
It's Marcus in the copy, so all good.
That's all right.
Double check.
Nobody reads the copy. They read the tagline in the picture. Craig Gabriel's not having a birthday, but he's covering the Davis Cup for us, and he's ready to roll on a Monday morning. Good morning, Craig.
Hello, chaps.
Nice to be with you. What's going down in the Group D activity for the Australians in the Davis Cup, please?
Well, Australia's done and dusted. They're out of it. They haven't made the quarterfinals. And right now, the tie that is happening here in Torino is Colombia versus the United States. And the Americans won the first match. But right now, the Colombians are ahead. John Isner just lost the first set 3-6 in this second singles match.
Righty-o. So, focusing on just on the Aussies for a sec, was it a disappointing performance for the Aussies? Croatia and Hungary doesn't sound like it's a group of death.
No, look, against Croatia, it was 3-0 to the Croats against Australia, and they were just really impressive. Out of the two ties that Australia played, Croatia and also against Hungary, the Australians came away with two wins out of the five matches that they played. So there was no way that they were going to be able to secure a place in the quarterfinal playoff because a couple of the other nations have done way better than the Australians did. So it was disappointing. The last time they played Davis Cup under this format in 2019, the Australians made the quarterfinals. That was in Madrid. But far from it with these conditions, the court is painfully slow and the balls are fluffing up after just a couple of games, so slowing things down even further.
Craig, what's up with the Demon, Alex Dimonor? He's had an awful season. He had a bad loss, then he was better in the second tie. Where do you see him? Like, has he plateaued, or what are you predicting for Alex?
Yeah, I did speak with him about this very thing during the tournament in Bercy earlier in the month. And I said, are you just hoping or looking forward to the end of this year? And he said, absolutely. It's just been a disappointing year. He said he was expecting a lot from himself. It was, the results were up and down. Then he got COVID as well. He'd won the grass court tournament in Eastbourne just before Wimbledon. He played Wimbledon. It was iffy. Got COVID. And then he struggled after, you know, once he got well again, getting through some of the other matches. So he's just really hoping that things turn around in 2022 with how he plays and some of the results he gets on board.
What do we think of the Davis Cup, Craig? Obviously, it's changed dramatically in format, and we've talked about this before, but another edition of it at the moment. What are we thinking?
Not happy. Not too many are very happy with this. You know, as Hewitt said on, I guess, my prompting, you know, he said, you know, they've sold its soul, meaning they, meaning the ITF, and Cosmos, which is the company that is owned by Gerard Piquet, the footballer, that bought the rights to it, and they're controlling it. It's been a miserable situation. You know, they removed the best of five sets format. It's best of three. The home and away concept was done away with. They're in this situation, and what's going to be even worse if this actually happens next week? The ITF board are going to more than likely approve a move next year for Davis Cup and moving it to Abu Dhabi, of all places, which has not got a history in the sport, and it's only because of money, nothing else. It's just a very poor situation, and you know, the ITF have as I've been saying, sold the family silverware.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. Just one final one from me, just on Omicron and this new whatever it is
variant of
coronavirus. Is that being spoken about at all yet? And just potentially the impact it may have on people traveling, tennis players traveling to Australia?
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's being discussed quite a bit, a really fair amount. You know, they don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, they're sitting and waiting now to see, because things were falling into place going into the Australian season in January. And now this has happened. So we don't know. And I'm worried. I'm worried about my own return. I was staying away to avoid hotel quarantine, and now this has cropped up. And from what I'm understanding, that all international travelers, I'm not talking about the ones coming in from Southern Africa with the 14 days of hotel quarantine, but all international travelers are going to be put through 72 hours of isolation. But, yeah, it is being talked about and questioned, and not in a massive way, because it's still so new and fresh. But there is concern about how this is going to affect the Australian season, and waiting to see what measures are taken by the government.
They sat down to fight it out. A stirring Jericho Cup battle. This is like St. Edmund gold medals all over again. Will John hit the lead, though, from a game, Bud Fox? And Will John will do it.
Will John over a game. Bud Fox is called by Rick McIntosh there at the Bull yesterday for the fourth edition of the Jericho Cup, fast becoming, as I said, one of the great days on the Australian racing calendar. And Bill Gibbons, I'm sure, sits there with a chest puffed out and a big smile on his dial. He put it together a couple of years ago. He joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, mate. I'm not sure about the puffed out chest and the big smile, but I'm pretty contented, yeah.
Yeah, surely you've got to be seeing what's happening yesterday and the last couple of years, the build-up, the way it's grown, Bill, and you sit there and go, this has become something very, very special. And it's as it is a great race, it's more than racing. I think that's what makes it quite unique.
Yeah, it's just a race for battlers, mate. As I've said, you could probably buy the entire field for $300,000. you still have change to go to Bali for a couple of weeks. But that's they're not blue bloods, they're just battlers. And it's always amazed me that people can keep paying up for horses that just aren't going that fast. so this is something that, you know, that they can aspire to. Anybody can win this race. And it just so happens a very rich guy won the race yesterday. It's Colin McKenna. But just because he's got money doesn't exclude him from being a good bloke. And he is a great guy. All the battlers can win it. It's just that it's an easy race, and no one knows. It was a very good field. Unbelievable. I can't remember the turn. There's three across the track.
Yeah.
After 4,600 up and down the hill twice. An amazing race.
Can you believe what you've built, Bill? I mean, it is phenomenal. The level of interest, the emotional attachment very quickly. Four runnings of the Jericho, and everyone talks about it, and everyone now wants to win it. There's a real emotional connection to this.
Yeah, a lot of people say, did you expect it to be this big? Of course I bloody expected it to be this big. That's why I did it. But whether it would, when I said to Roland Perry, I was up at the Warrnambool Senior Committee 5-6 years ago, I said, I've got it up, it's going to happen. He said, I hope it's successful. I said, it'll be successful. Just how successful will be, how hard you work on it. And a lot of time went into you had to bring it together because there's no point in running this race at Moonee Valley or Flemington or wherever. This is the place to run the race. It's a pinch on the Grand Annual, as far as we had to get to take the jumps away. And it's just running those horses, running free through the paddocks. It just looks fantastic. And it just had to be there. And, start the Sydney way, finish the Melbourne way. And it's 7 minutes. And people say, why Warrnambool? But that's why. It's just a fantastic course. And plus, you can't get everybody there, but with TV, it can go around Australia, and it is a showcase for Warrnambool. It's just a spectacular event. And the crowd, when they had the minute silence, you could have heard a pin drop. When they played the national anthems, you could have heard from New Zealand and Australia. And they spoke the oath, lest we forget. Everybody, that 5,000 people or so on course, you could have heard a pin drop as the respect that was. And I said, I don't know whether people, you make speeches in the middle of the track and you're never sure whether people can hear you or not. But I just said, thanks for paying the light horse the respect that they deserve. And, it's a special day. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, congratulations, Bill, with what you've done. And you've got a big fan in here with Matt Stewart, who just loves the event, maybe as much as you do, Bill.
I think he likes it more than I.
But so a couple of things on that, because you're now handing over the reins. You're now handing it over, and it's going to be someone else's responsibility to continue to grow it, and Racing Victoria have said that they will. Are you confident that everything's going to be the way you want it to be moving forward?
If you'd asked me that question last week, I'd have said no.
Yeah.
But at least Giles Thompson was there on course, and I haven't spoken to him since about the thing, but at least he got to stand there and feel the emotion that is attached to this race. And maybe it just got through to him that it is something special. And maybe that the Racing Victoria should treat it with the respect that it deserves. So I'm not sort of going. The last 12 months, really. I don't know. I reckon it's taken years off my life. It's not knowing with all this COVID. Are you working for all this? And then once again, there's going to be nobody there. You didn't know. So it was. Yeah, it's been a hard slog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worthwhile.
And then when is the best time of year to run it? Because this week we had the Zipping Classic, and there was a big build-up around the Zipping Classic going to Caulfield, and it was a great day at Caulfield on Saturday with the Jericho to come on the weekend as well. What do you think moving forward? Does it need to move later, more into the summer? You're happy with where it is? What are your thoughts on that?
No, just move the Zipping Classic. That's what you've got to do.
Right.
That's the simple answer. I didn't select this time. When we were battling to get the race up, that was what was allocated. You can come in here somewhere between Christmas and the spring carnival, and that was given to us. So what you do, now you don't change anything. When you get something, you organise it, you plan all the things that can go right, all the things that can go wrong, and you put together a blueprint of how something's going to happen, and then you just do it. You don't change anything. I'm not changing a thing. The Jericho Cup's the fourth weekend after the fourth Sunday after the Melbourne Cup, and everything revolves around before and after the Melbourne Cup as far as the racing industry goes. So that's where we are. We're at Warrnambool, we're on a Sunday, and that's it.
Full stop.
Full stop.
I think Matthew, your friend Matthew, wouldn't mind it being the standalone Saturday.
Yeah. But Matthew says, oh, you'll get 20. I don't want 20,000 people. It'd be bloody painful if it was 20,000 people. You know, we're going to do it in summer. We're going to have beach cricket and beach volleyball and all these dickheads running around that would not know anything about the light horse. No, that ain't going to happen. It's you had 5,000 people there who knew what it was all about. You looked around the crowd, they all, not all, 90% of people were dressed up in their fines. They didn't go there to win a bloody fashions on the field contest. They wanted to pay respect to the day. And you know, that's what it is. It is what it is, and we'll stay with it. Now, if someone wants to come on and try and change it, well, they're going to lose. It's you set something up and you just keep doing it. The Zipping Classic. Now, let me tell you the Zipping Classic. The Zipping Classic honours a horse that was trained by the best racer horse trainer to never bother getting the trainer's license. But this honours Australia's history, you know, that you put someone in uniform with a gun over their shoulder on a horse, and there's just something romantic about it. It takes you back, and that's what the racing industry is. They're descendants of these people. They were horsemen 100 years ago, and they're horsemen today.
It was week two of the A-League across the weekend. If you want to go through the results, this is what you do. You click on the button, and it says to you that Western United had a 1-0 victory over Perth Glory to get some points on the board, 3 points on the board. Wellington defeated Central Coast 2-1. Adelaide and Melbourne City played a 2-all draw. Melbourne City scoring twice in the last 15 minutes to square it up. MacArthur defeated Sydney FC 1-0. And the Melbourne Victory defeated Brisbane Roar yesterday 3-0. And the Wanderers and the Jets played a 2-all draw. But let's go back to Western United and their performance on Friday night against the Perth Glory. 1-0 was the result, and Steve Lustiger was very, very happy about that. He joins us on The Breakfast Club this morning. G'day, Steve.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Were you happy with the performance overall? It was a 78-minute goal for your boys, but were you happy with how it all panned out?
Yeah, look, it wasn't our best performance. It was only our second game. I thought we probably played a little bit better the week before against Victory when we lost, but you know, we got the 3 points. It showed great character from the boys to you know, get the result, especially when we probably didn't have our best performance. So, look, overall, we're very happy to get our first win of the season.
We spoke to John last week after that performance against John Aloisi, the coach, for those listening, after the performance against the Victory. He talked about how well he thought you played and would have been quite within your rights to take the 3 points in that game. It didn't happen. Was there pressure on you to get some 3 points on the board after that performance?
Look, no, I don't think there was pressure on us, but obviously, you know, you always want to win your first game. You know, you've got a bit of, you know, you're a bit anxious, you're a bit sort of nervous. You always want to get that first win of the season, and, you know, we're very happy that it came against Perth, you know, albeit, you know, like I said, it probably wasn't our best performance. Probably, you know, definitely I thought we played better the week before against Victory, but, you know, it shows that's also a great trait to have from the team, is to grind out a result when you're not playing so well.
One of the challenges...
We'll take a lot of positives out of that result.
Sorry, one of the challenges with a new coach is working out how to play under him and getting that chemistry, and it's easy to do through a pre-season, and you get practice matches and you scratch matches against yourselves, but when it's against opposition who are fighting for their lives just like you are, it sometimes can take a bit longer. Are you confident that what John's doing and building with this squad can come together quite quickly?
Yeah, look, 100%. You know, John's come in with, you know, we've had a long pre-season, but, you know, it's been so positive since the first day he's come in. You know, we've worked at it on our structures, the way he wants us to play, and everyone's, you know, bought into that. Everyone's on board. And, you know, it will take a bit of time, but, you know, every game in the A-League's hard. You know, you're not going to have any easy games. So every game's going to be a battle. And, you know, we've got to be on top of our game if we want to be, you know, up there winning games and making sure that each week we're performing well.
And Dylan Wenzel-Hall's got the came off the bench for the winner. Tell us a little bit about him. It's first goal for, obviously, United.
Yeah, look, Dylan's come from Brisbane Roar. Good up-and-coming young player. He did well in Brisbane, and, you know, he's full of energy. He came on and did really well, and it was good for him, obviously, to get his first goal for his new club. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be many more for him this season.
Steve, you've played at so many different places over the last decade and now going to a brand new club, essentially with Western United. We've spoken a lot to a lot of the players in the last couple of years and obviously to Jonah Lewis just last week about building a new culture. What's it like? What does it feel like, Western United, to you?
Yeah, look, this has now been my third season at Western United, and look, the club's got, you know, a big future ahead of them. You know, now we've got a new chapter now with a new coach. We've got a lot of new players in this season as well, a few new foreign players. We've got, you know, a good mixture of experienced players, younger players. And, you know, there's so much happening at Western United that, you know, there's a lot to look forward to. You know, obviously there's a new stadium happening, there's new facilities, you know, the fan base is growing. So, you know, it is going to take, you know, a couple of years for it to all happen. But, you know, year by year, you know, it seems like everything's coming along nicely. And, you know, the club's a very family-orientated club. You know, we're building our fan base. And like I said, there's definitely a lot to look forward to, and the future definitely looks bright for Western United.
Coach of South East Melbourne Phoenix, who joins us on the line after the Blitz has finished in the NBL. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Interesting conversation.
What would you do, Simon, as the coach of the Phoenix, if Ryan Brokoff, who signed this was the thing in the NBL, that next year he's going to play with the Adelaide 36ers, and he's started talking as glowing about the 36ers as Cheese did about the Roosters then, while still playing for your team. How would you handle that?
I think the first thing we've got to put a little reality into it. No one's leaving Melbourne to go to Adelaide.
No, it's a hypothetical, Simon.
Yeah, from a hypothetical standpoint, I think it'd be pretty difficult to deal with. I mean, we spend so much time in sport talking about culture and talking about you know, the importance of team and your teammates and caring for each other. When you've got someone with their eye on another party, make things pretty difficult. I guess that's the modern world of rugby. I mean, there's a little bit of it in AFL too, I guess, to an extent. And in basketball, it may be a little bit different because guys, well, a lot of players actually play for multiple teams during the course of a year. They'll spend a bit of time playing in Australia, and then they may have a gig overseas afterwards. So there may be a little bit of that. But at the end of the day, I guess most of the players are extremely professional. And they're competitors, as you guys know. You know, you're a competitor, you cross that white line, you're ready to go and you fight for your teammates. But I hope we don't get to that point because it probably could create a few issues.
I reckon you might be right. It's an unusual setting. Those boys in the NRL, they do things a bit differently. Your boys did a good job yesterday. The last game of the preseason blitz in the NBL, it was a showdown against crosstown rivals Melbourne United. And Ryan Brokoff, the man we're talking about, got hot late to get you over the line. Are you happy with how things are progressing?
Yeah. We've had a preseason that's obviously had its difficulties, as everybody has with the COVID and the situation we find ourselves in Melbourne at the moment. But, you know, as far as performance, I thought we were pretty solid across the four games. I was a little disappointed with the way we went against Sydney in the first game, but the other three games, and two of which we lost, I thought there were some really good signs there for us getting ready. It'd just be nice. You know, we just need to get our whole squad on the floor at the one time. We've been a little bit hampered with lineups, but yeah, trainings have started to improve in that regard, and yeah, we're really looking forward to the season proper.
Your recruits, are you seeing what you thought you might be seeing from them so far?
Yeah, a little bit more, actually.
Oh, good.
You know, Joe Chi has been amazing. And, you know, he's got some tricks in the kit bag that he hasn't pulled out in the games. He's just got to make some adjustments to the referees, and I think they probably need to make adjustments to him as well, just with his size and length and what he can actually do physically. I think he gets some blocked shots that get called fouls because they just, like, well, we haven't seen a bloke block a shot from that angle or from that distance. And it's kind of like, well, something wrong must have happened because, you know, he got there, but he's actually... he's amazing, tremendously skilled. You know, there's a language barrier there, but the bloke's absolutely adoring. and he's got a great sense of humour, and he's really fitting well at the club. So, yeah, he's been fantastic. Xavier Mumford is still finding his way, but, you know, there's moments of practice where you're just like, okay, here we go. This guy can really, really go. And we've seen that in the games as well. So we're just trying to put it all together, and hopefully we have it all in place by round one.
And the
It was a big moment. George Kambosos, Ferocious Kambosos, George Jr., took down one of the biggest names in boxing, Teofimo Lopez, to claim lots of titles, as you heard the ring announcer.
He was up and about, that announcer.
Well, he had 17 belts to announce when he won it. He stunned the world, did George, and Paul Upham was watching it all unfold, Fox Sports boxing analyst. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, gentlemen.
I've never seen more belts on one man, Paul.
And that's what made it such a big win. He wasn't just fighting for one of the world titles. He's fighting for all the world titles. Undisputed lightweight champion. Great win by George. Historic win. And it rockets him to the top of boxing. And, you know, Australian boxing needs guys like George Kambosos coming through and having fantastic wins at Madison Square Garden like that.
Now, what we were talking before, Paul, and with all respect to the Australian scene, we hadn't heard too much of George. How come?
Look, he hasn't had that big fight, but also he was very smart. He's based himself overseas. He spent a lot of time fighting overseas, doing a lot of training camps overseas. He was in Manny Pacquiao's training camps a few times. He's done reportedly 200 rounds with Pacquiao, and that does two things. One, it shows you how good he is that Pacquiao thinks he's a challenge, and two, you can't help but learn from that. And the problem with Australian fighters is they take that step up to the world level, and sometimes quite often they fall short. George put himself up there, did all the training, prepared, and that's why he won.
Paul, what about your man Lopez? When George was getting interviewed, he came and grabbed the microphone and told the crowd obviously he was the rightful winner and the judges cheated.
He said he ran 10 rounds, and that was clearly delusional. And, you know, I blame it on the corner. His father is the trainer and was telling, even when George was clearly winning rounds, I had 8-4 on my scorecard for George, he was telling him, oh, you won that round, you won that round. So he thinks... He thinks that he won the fight. You've got to be honest in the corner of your fighter. If you're losing the rounds, you've got to switch it up, do something different, but be honest.
It's an unusual outcome. The way he fought it, though, and the way he actually put the fight together, was it meticulous, or was he just too strong in the key moments?
Well, he wasn't strong because you could see, if you watch the fight, Lopez was much bigger going into that fight. It was a smart tactical fight. He counterpunched really well. And Lopez came out and told everyone, I'm going to knock George out in the first round. Put your money on a first-round knockout. So it doesn't leave you a lot of wriggle room after that. When Kambosos knew that was going to happen, he just slipped and countered and was able to knock him down at the end of that first round. That was the whole turning point for the fight, as far as I'm concerned. It showed the crowd and everybody else that Kambosos is here to win. And he just continued that on. And Lopez fought a dumb fight. He just kept trying to knock him out with one big punch.
Now, I want to talk about that first round knockdown because the scorecards came out, obviously, at the end of the fight. And two of the three judges only gave George the round 10-9. Normally, when there's a knockdown, it goes to, it's pretty much straightforward 10-8, isn't it?
The problem is there's two separate things. One, you're scoring forget the knockdown. Who actually won the round? Did you think that Lopez won the round? Then you give him a point for that. But then the actual knockdown counts as 1 point separate. So there's a little bit of subtlety there in the scoring. Normally, when a guy knocks someone down the round, you say, OK, he won the round, but it's actually separated. It's a little technical aspect of scoring not a lot of people understand. So that's why there was a difference there. But look, as I said, I had it 8-4. One judge had Lopez winning. He's obviously rewarding the aggression and one big punch, rather the other judges were scoring on the technical aspects of multiple landing blows over a longer period of time.
So, Paul, how good could he be? I mean, obviously, he's the world champion, but we're talking about someone that, if we sort of cast our eye forward a couple of years, are we talking about a genuine superstar here?
That's the key question. Can he do it? You know, we saw with Jeff Horn that he had the big win over Manny Pacquiao. He had one defence, and then, you know, his career sort of petered out. Can George establish a career over a number of years and do what, you know, Jeff Fenwick did, win multiple world titles and multiple weight classes, like Costa did, had multiple runs of the world title. that's the thing. It's so hard to get to the top. It's even harder to stay there. So, you know, there's a lot of dangerous opponents at lightweight who will be lining him up now thinking they can beat him. And it's going to be one step at a time, one fight at a time. Certainly on this performance, you would think that George can have some good wins and carry this on for a number of years at the age of only 28.
Magnificent stuff. Was the Big Bash final, the women's WBBL competition Saturday night at Optus Stadium. Adelaide did the right thing. They won the toss and they bowled. But they came up against the best team, who put up 146, it was, and the strikers can only manage 134, which means the Perth Scorchers were the WBBL champs for the first time. Alistair Dobson was watching it all unfold as CEO of the BBL, joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Alistair.
Good morning, guys. Great to chat again.
Good on you. Great to have you with us. There's a great WBBL series. We were talking about this last week, well, for the last couple of weeks, really. We had some great performances, some great energy, some really good teams, and it's going from strength to strength. How have you seen it?
Yeah, it was a pretty remarkable end to an amazing season, I think, on Saturday night. And you're right, we had, you know, eight really competitive teams. The depth in the competition these days is incredible. You know, every team's got, you know, 10, 11, 12 genuine stars in it, and I think that showed in the cricket throughout the competition. And, you know, to be able to get it completed again with such a big finish was really rewarding to everyone involved.
Yeah, and well done to the Scorchers. They were the best and deserved it. My girl Beth Mooney just taking charge again at the top of the order. Saif Devine set the scene for them. What about the Big Bash for the men's starts this week? Yeah, there's a big launch today in Sydney, I believe, is what's happening. Are you concerned about borders and all that stuff with this Omicron thing that's now come in and having to manage all that, or is it under control for the moment?
Oh, look, I think we're obviously monitoring it pretty closely. We've got pretty used to it over the past sort of 18 months of keeping our eye on borders and the way different things are trending. I think at the moment we're okay. Obviously, we've got, you know, Victoria and New South Wales open and South Australia's border restrictions easing, and Queensland and Tassie are due to do the same in the next couple of weeks. So on the basis that those things still continue, you know, as planned, we're in reasonable shape. That said, you know, there's always twists and turns, and obviously some challenges around international borders at the moment, you know, will be something we'll need to navigate. But, you know, we're really excited about kicking off this Sunday night in Sydney with the Sixers and the Stars, and, you know, the roadshow begins from there.
So just on that, Al, to start with Perth, what are you going to do with them? Where are they going to be based?
Yeah, we're working really closely with the Scorch at the moment. Obviously, the first game we're able to play in Perth for just some of the quirks of the schedule that the Brisbane Heat won't have been in Melbourne, and Perth can start there. And then we've got to relocate their second game for the reason that the Strikers will have been in Melbourne, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all a whole range of little quirks. I think at the moment they're planning on basing themselves potentially in Adelaide for a fair period of the competition, but we're still working through that with them. Obviously, it's really important that we take care of their players and their staff. They're going to likely to be on the road for a reasonable amount of the season, and you know, fingers crossed we can get more games back in Perth in the back half.
Yeah, I'm not really the right person to ask these questions because I absolutely love the BBL and watch every single game. But getting some extra star power to the tournament, I know it's hard for a variety of different reasons. Chris Jordan going to the Sixers, I think he's really good. Are there any more to come to give that a little bit more star power?
Yeah, look, I think we worked ongoing with all our clubs, and they've been really ambitious again this year with their overseas recruiting, bearing in mind some of the challenges that have been there around international borders and, you know, still presenting themselves with players being able to get in and participate in the competition. So look, we never rest on that. There's still players around that are interested in coming to the BBL. Our clubs are still in the market. There's still opportunity to continue to recruit players. That said, the players we do have in the comp this year, again, are world class, and, you know, we'll set the competition alight with that. You know, Rashid Khan back. You know, you mentioned Chris Jordan, who was a star in the World Cup for England, and, you know, a couple of the other players from Afghanistan. So, you know, we've got, you know, great names again, and looking forward to them doing their thing.
And sorry, the question I had for you in regards to player availability is around the Australian players and when they'll play. The Australia A game against the England Lions isn't ideal timing for your league. How are we going to work that so we get them playing as much as possible?
It's an annual kind of dance, if you like, between the international matches that are scheduled and the BBL in and around them. It's always been the case, you know, in 10 years of the BBL this year. There's a bit of content at the very start, as you mentioned, the Australia A game, but then those players, you know, those that aren't then called into the test squad will come straight into their BBL, you know, outfits pretty quick after that. And then from there, we really know, most of the white ball stars from the World Cup will play, you know, the entire tournament, and again, lots of big names coming and going, and then we work really closely with everyone involved in the national team setup to make sure players can move, you know, to and from their BBL team into the test side as required.
The Stars, from a Melbourne perspective, kick it off on Sunday against the Sixers at the SCG, and the Renegades play on Tuesday against the Strikers. In terms of the crowd capacity, are we full capacity at all these venues now?
It varies a bit around the country. In Melbourne, certainly, you know, working towards full capacity. I think in some other states, they're still, as their borders open and they learn how to deal with the virus potentially coming in, those restrictions will be something we'll monitor pretty closely. But in Melbourne, we're excited about full crowds.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.